Looking for a particular truck part? Then look no further. The Rush Truck Center's All Makes Parts catalog features more than 16,000 of the most popular All Makes parts from top suppliers in the industry and with quality brands you know and trust. And at 164 full-color pages, this is their biggest catalog yet. Our friends at Rush Truck Centers have great deals for you all year long. Check out their monthly parts and service specials in-store and online. And when you're ready to order, shop online with Parts Connect at RushTruckCenters.com. Expect more from Rush Truck Centers.
This is America's Trucking Network with Kevin Gordon.
Welcome aboard. Thanks for tuning in. Certainly appreciate it. As we roll into this Friday morning, can you believe it? The week, where did it go? You know, it's like I turned on the microphone and all of a sudden Monday became Tuesday became Friday and all this sort of stuff. And it's just a really busy week. And there's been a lot going on. A lot of stuff, a lot of news and that type of thing. And I want to start off the program today with on a high note. You know, I've been stressing since I took the show over in April that what I am seeing from an accounting standpoint and from tonnage standpoint, freight rates and that type of thing, and getting behind the numbers and looking at forecasts and seeing what is going on and knowledge of the economy itself. I've been very bullish and very steadfast in saying that I think the trucking industry is extremely strong and I think there's upside potential and that type of thing, despite what all the pundits are saying and despite what some of the negativity that I'm hearing from other people. And here's a story to start off. Recession-fearing pundits looking for earnings slowdown won't find evidence in PACCAR. PACCAR has set a fourth quarter 2022 records in revenue and net income. And that's in these times when you've got supply chain issues, when you've got all kinds of problems as far as whether or not the economy is going to get back to full speed, when you got interest rates going up and, you know, people purchasing power coming down. The whole nine yards, a lot of things moving in the wrong direction, but that is not so. That is not happening in the trucking industry and in some of these companies. New medium and heavy duty trucks at Kenworth, Peterbilt, and DAF Trucks, a continuing streak of strong quarter over quarter performance in its parts business and strong profits in financial services combined for big numbers at the Bellevue, Washington based manufacturer. Darren Silver, PACCAR Executive Vice President, Kenworth and Peterbilt achieved market shares of 29.8% in 2022 compared with 29.2% in 2021. Now, 0.7 of a percentage point and that sort of thing, usually, I mean, you think, well, shoot, that's less than a 10% or that's less than a full percentage point. But when you're talking about market share, that is huge because for every percentage point or 10th of a percentage point that you gain, somebody else is coming down. It's that push pull in terms of when you're looking at numbers, when you've got, when you got a majority, okay? If you've got a 50-50 split, if you gain one, they lose one. So now there's a two number split. And the more that happens, the more of a split there is. So when you take a percentage point from one company in terms of market share and you gain a market share, that then puts 2 points between you and them. And it's interesting that in a tight market, when supply chains are the problem that they are, that when you're starting to gain market share all things being equal, it could be just a situation of where your suppliers are better than the other suppliers. And since you've got the trucks available, those are the ones that people are gravitating to. But again, you know, there is a certain amount of brand loyalty. I know that, you know, people like a particular truck. They like the way it handles. I know I like my particular car the way it handles. And when I drive somebody else's car or I get a rental car if we're going on vacation, there's a whole different dynamic. And it's like, you know, when I get back in my old car, I appreciate it more than even the brand new car. And I've said this before. I've got a 2000 Camry, Toyota Camry, that is serving me well. I love driving it. There's very hardly any blind spots. And over the years, I mean, my wife's got newer cars and I've driven those on vacation. I've driven different cars, that type of thing. And I really have a full appreciation for my car, and it does what I want it to do. And it's fun to drive, and it got visibility and the way it handles on the road and that type of thing. So, you know, there is brand loyalty. And when to get somebody to switch from a particular truck to another truck is a big deal. But again, PACCAR said Class 8 truck industry retail sales in the U.S. and Canada were 283,500 units in 2022. And they're talking about the it's better yet to come. Pent-up demand from the prior 3 years, according to Preston Fate, he is the CEO of PACCAR, said pent-up demand of the three prior years under production. Customers need to replace aging fleets. And we've talked about this on this program several times, the fact that when you've got a large fleet, and you need to replace those, you set yourself up in a pattern. And even if you have a four company fleet, if you have four trucks, you don't want to replace all four of those trucks every year or once every 5 years. So you set up a plan and you say, all right, I got four trucks, so I'm going to try to replace the oldest one in 4 years, then 4 years for the next oldest one and that type of thing. So you keep rotating your fleet and rotating that. So when you have these big trucking companies that have hundreds of trucks in their fleet, then when they're trying to replace those in 1 year and then there's nothing available and they may have to replace those with late model trucks, then, you know, you have that pent up anxiety, or you have that pent up need to buy additional vehicles. And if your profits are such and you have the decent cash flow, maybe you can do a little bit more purchases instead of one quarter of your fleet, maybe a quarter and a half or something like that, maybe 30% of your fleet. But all this pent-up desire, pent-up anxiety, pent-up need in the trucking industry. They're also talking about Europe is doing well, Brazil, Australia, North America all doing well. Expects to produce 49,000 to 53,000 trucks in just the first quarter, which is good. In Europe, DAF, which is a Dutch truck manufacturing company, they posted a record 17.3% share in the above 16-ton market, which is, the market share in 2023 compared to 15.9% in 2021. So they actually picked up 1.4% in terms of market share. And that's good news. PACCAR declared a cat. Now, this is really interesting. I never see this. You never see this in the financial sector. PACCAR declared cash dividends of $4.19 per share during 2022, including a $2.80 extra cash dividend paid in January January 5th, I guess I should say. The total shareholder return for the year was 17.1%. That is unheard of. Total dividends of $1.646 billion was a record for them. Let's see. PACCAR generated shareholder returns. I mean, you know, when you own stock and you get a dividend, you're lucky to get a 1%, 2% or something along those lines, because when a company pays a dividend, if the next year, you know, they don't match that, then the shareholders get a little irritated. So you try to set your dividends to a point where you know that even in a bad year, you can probably pay that dividend again. But paying out almost 17.1% in total dividends is absolutely amazing. The company also declared a 50% stock dividend in December. A new share, you get a new share for every two shares that you own. So now you get a little bit more bang for your buck and that type of thing. Just going through some of the numbers here real quick. 2022 PACCAR's 84th consecutive year reporting a net income. So they have not had a loss for 84 years. PACCAR reported parts revenue of $1.47 billion. The full year had 10% return on your investment in terms of the company is concerned, and ended the year with more than $6 billion cash on hand. And that's a very strong company. And going forward, they might have some room for a couple of acquisitions during the coming year. They don't say that in the report, but I'm just throwing it out there. When we get back, we've got today, let's see, we've got oil and gas prices. And, of course, we've got a really good one today in transportation history. I'm Kevin Gordon, America's Trucking Network, 700 WLW.
This is the Racing Report on America's Trucking Network on 700 WLW.
Seven-time NASCAR champion Jimmy Johnson ran his first laps this week in a next-gen car during a test at Phoenix Raceway. Fox Sports' Bob Pockrass with Johnson.
After 2 years of IndyCar, did it seem slow?
Speed did seem different. there's no doubt about that. And then just the mass of the vehicle. Such a different feeling in a stock car with all the mass. Trying to slow it down, trying to change directions, trying to use the throttle. But the Indy car is so crisp and nimble. But that's been hard for me to sense and feel. So it was really nice to be back in a car that gave me some warning, gave me some cues that it's, you know, slipping and sliding around.
But Richard Petty said that you were going to be a rookie. Did you feel like a rookie?
In some respects, I did. They didn't have a yellow sticker on the back of my car, so I was really happy about that.
Also this weekend, the IMSA WeatherTech Series season kicks off with the running of the Rolex 24 at Daytona.
This is the Racing Report on America's Trucking Network on 700 WLW.
Seg Dennis and ATN.
The Bengals are heading to Kansas City.
Preparing you for the Bengals and Chiefs. This is a 700 WLW First Community Mortgage Playoff Preview.
Touchdown!
First Community Mortgage, proud sponsor of the American Dream. This playoff preview is presented by Metro. Now, your hosts, Mo Egger and Tony Pike.
Tony, you and I spent most of the season wondering, are the Bengals ever going to get their running game going? And against the Bills last week, the answer was yes. If the answer is yes this Sunday, I don't know how the Chiefs stopped the Bengals.
How many different times did we see Ja'Marr Chase motion through the backfield? How many times did they utilize motion, which allowed Joe Mixon maybe just a little bit more room? And he hits those holes, makes some big plays happen. I thought it was the most complete run game plan that they've used to date because there was so much creativity involved in it.
Mo and Tony have more on 700 WLW, the home of the best Bengals coverage.
Are you so financially focused on what's next, you're missing out on enjoying right now? At Allworth Financial's...
America's Trucking Network. I'm Kevin Gordon. As we normally do in the second segment, we take a look at oil and gas prices just to bring us up to date on that. Today's going to be no different. West Texas Intermediate crude currently is $81.11. That's up 96 cents or 1.2%. Brent crude, $87.34, up $1.22 or 1.42%. Okay, you got Brent crude there creeping up to that $90 a barrel. At $87.34, and then at West Texas Intermediate crude at $81, we're well on our way up to that $90 a barrel. Oil up 1% is positive U.S. data. China reopening boosts demand optimism. Again, I kind of have to mention that this is always written from the perspective of investors, people who are investing in oil futures or in the stock market or whatever. And this is from an investment standpoint, certainly not from a consumer standpoint. Oil prices rose more than 1% on Thursday on expectations that global demand will strengthen as top oil importer China reopens its economy on positive U.S. economic data. Now, U.S. economy grew faster than expected yesterday, late in the afternoon, is when they announced the GDP numbers for the fourth quarter. We're up, fourth quarter GDP was at 2.9%. So the U.S. economy grew faster than expected in the fourth quarter as consumers maintained a solid pace of spending, but momentum had slowed significantly by the end of the year with higher interest rates eroding demand. Well, of course, but you've got, you know, what people don't realize, and I don't know why these economic experts don't understand this. When you've got pent-up demand, when you have people who have pretty much been shut down for a three-year period of time, Things have not been back to normal completely. The schools were closed for more than 2 years in terms of homeschooling. I think there's a university that's right near where I live, Northern Kentucky University, and they were supposed to this year, actually, I think in the spring of last year, were going to demand that everybody come back to campus for classes. But apparently all the whining and whatever was done, and so they were allowing remote learning, and then they said, well, we're going to ramp up again in the fall. I understand from talking to a lot of people that they are still allowing remote learning. And this seems to be something that people, that group now is expecting. And rather than being the adults in the room and the university saying, you need that one-on-one instruction, you need that social gathering, you need to learn how to communicate with other people and be around people to know how to react. I mean, there are, I know I'm off subject here, but stick with me. There are now life coaches that are getting $480 to $500 an hour to teach kids how to talk on the phone because they're so used to texting that they don't have that personal interaction. Can you imagine the demand that they're going to be in charging the life coaches when you actually have to work face-to-face with somebody? I mean, you talk about doing somebody a total injustice the way these schools have allowed these kids, or actually originally forced the kids to stay home and did the remote learning, to the point now where they're having trouble readjusting to one-on-one instructions. So anyway, I digress. But again, well, in the markets here, when you're seeing pent-up action, when you have supply chain issues, people can't buy what they wanted to buy. People can't do whatever they did over the last couple of years. And I think this Christmas was one of those breakouts of where people actually felt comfortable, at least temporarily, with the economy. Their jobs seemed to be semi-secure, and they went out and spent some money. I mean, even the economists, it's like they have this short-sighted view because just 6 months ago, they were talking about how people have shifted their spending to where they would normally do certain things, as far as what they were purchasing in the marketplace, and it shifted to more outgoing types of things like going out to dinner, going to concerts, taking trips, doing some traveling, and that type of thing. And it shifted what was being spent in the previous quarters into a whole different genre or whole different part of the economy. And so why this stuff, I mean, when they make the reports and then they don't have that in the back of their head when they do the next report, it blows me away. But again, 2.9% increase in GDP last year. Meanwhile, U.S. crude inventories edged up 533,000 barrels up to 448.5 million barrels. And what they're saying is that was short of the forecast. But again, they rolled that into the numbers. China has been easing stringent COVID-19 restrictions this month. And, of course, the Lunar New Year holiday and all that sort of stuff, that's coming to an end. And we'll see with the billion people that were traveling around there what that does to their economy in terms of COVID numbers and infections and that type of thing. From a world economy standpoint, and again, this will create problems in the oil sector, at least in terms of demand and supply, that hopefully OPEC increases their supplies and increases their drilling, or we here in the United States get the idea and start ramping up our drilling in this country. China opening up, at least from the standpoint of selling goods to them, they do the imports, but then some of the manufacturing that's going on there and freeing up some of that supply chain issues would be a good thing. I hope they experience over there what we experienced here after Christmas, where all the, experts, and I'm doing the air quotes here, where they were saying that, well, there's going to be an increase in COVID or flu and all that sort of stuff as a result of people gathering over the holidays. Well, hopefully that doesn't transpire in China, because we didn't see that here in the United States. As a matter of fact, they have declared, I think I mentioned this the other day, that the flu season is technically over, that the amount of flu cases that they saw had ended. And usually the flu season can last anywhere from, well, it begins usually in October and can end anytime thereafter. The earliest was, I think, December, about 6-7 years ago. And the longest has gone into May, even, as far as the flu season is concerned. But this was apparently a very short flu season. And, you know, looking at some of the numbers and hearing the news reports around the greater Cincinnati, northern Kentucky area, apparently all of the individual counties are in the green as far as COVID cases and that type of thing. Global economic growth is forecast to barely be above 2% this year. But with the resilience of the American economy, the American people hopefully will beat those forecasts despite all the pressure, despite all the stupidity going on in Washington. But hopefully that will be minimized. Looking at gas prices, currently national average for gas is $3.50. You remember before Christmas, they were saying, oh, we're going to be seeing gas below $3 a gallon, supposedly. Well, that didn't happen, and now we're halfway to $4 a gallon. That is up significantly from a month ago. That's 40 cents up compared to a year ago. We're up 16 cents, 5% increase. Compared to 2 years ago, we're up 90 cents per gallon. Actually, back in 2020, 3 years ago, that's 35% increase. And then when we go over to the diesel markets, diesel prices currently are at $4.68. That is basically the same as it was a month ago. But when you compare it to a year ago, we are up a dollar from what we paid just a year ago. That's a 27% increase. Then when you compare that to 2020, which, by the way, I need to remind you that back in 2020, under the Trump administration, we were energy independent for the first time since 1949. Barrels of oil were at $49 a barrel, $49 to $50 a barrel, and diesel at that time was $3.01. We're paying $1.67 more per gallon. That's a 55% increase. That's where inflationary numbers are coming from. Nationwide gas high is in Hawaii at $4.94 and to a low of $3.13 in Texas. Coming up, we have Today in Transportation History. I'm Kevin Gordon, America's Trucking Network. 700 WLW.
News, traffic, and weather. News Radio 700 WLW, Cincinnati.
A vigil held in Memphis for the death of a man at the hands of police. With a 12:30 report, I'm Sean McCormick. Breaking now, Memphis bracing for the Friday evening release of a reportedly graphic video, which will show a traffic stop January 7th that led to the death of Tyree Nichols 3 days later in a hospital. Thursday, five Memphis police officers who happened to be black were indicted on second-degree murder and other charges. Officials say the hour-long video will show the entire fateful encounter from beginning to end. Thursday night, a vigil was held for the victim in Memphis. Tyree's mother, Rovon Wells, was there and telling the crowd to be peaceful when the video is released.
If you guys are here for me and Tyree, yes, then you will protest peacefully.
As we head to our Friday morning, some clearing, a 7 a.m. temperature at 23. So some morning sun and then increasing clouds for the rest of our Friday. A high of 40 degrees. At night, scattered showers, mostly cloudy, and a low down to 33. From your severe weather station, I'm 9 First Warning Chief Meteorologist Steve Raleigh. News Radio 700 WLW.
Radar showing most of the snow and flurries moving eastward. Still a patch around Milford, also around Forest Park. Northern Kentucky, there are some around the Walton area as well. Cincinnati's Streetcar reporting a record number of riders in 2022. It topped 846,000 people, the most in its six-year history downtown. The daily ridership average is 2,300. That's still well below the projections the city had come up with back in 2010 when it applied for federal funding from the federal government to build the connector. Our next update is at 1 o'clock. I'm Sean McCormick, News Radio 700, WLW.
Bridgewater, the hit fiction podcast, is back. A supernatural thriller.
If you're looking for your next new truck, trust Rush Truck Centers, the nation's largest commercial vehicle dealer network. Rush Truck Centers has trucks in stock throughout the country, including heavy, medium, and light-duty work vehicles. Plus, they offer a wide range of programs that help coordinate, monitor, and expedite vehicle service and repairs throughout their qualified service facilities. Check out their online inventory today at rushtruckcenters.com. That's rushtruckcenters.com. Expect more from Rush Truck Centers. Please speak to your Rush Truck Centers representative for further details.
Here's your trucking forecast for the tri-state and the rest of the country. In the tri-state overnight, a cloudy sky, the low dropping to 24, mostly cloudy for your Friday, a high of 41, mostly cloudy Saturday, and warmer, a high near 50. Nationally, a strong storm that has affected large portions of the U.S. over the past few days from the southern plains into New England will continue to push northeastward away from the U.S. and across the Canadian Maritimes tonight. The well-organized area of precipitation ahead of this low was pushing out of eastern New England Thursday afternoon. In its wake, cold west-northwesterly flow off of the Great Lakes was supporting lake-effect snow showers in the lee of the lakes and into the upslope of the central to southern Appalachians through tonight, but should be diminished by Friday. An Arctic frontal boundary will begin to press southward from south-central Canada tonight and into the northern plains to upper Mississippi Valley region Friday. This Arctic front will then continue to surge southward into the central plains Saturday. Sharply colder temperatures expected in the wake of this front across the northern to central plains and upper Mississippi Valley region by this weekend, with high temperatures 10 to 20 degrees below average. Temperatures will only be near 0 degrees Saturday from northeastern Montana across North Dakota, northeast South Dakota, and northwest Minnesota. And these cold temperatures combined with windy conditions will result in dangerous wind chill readings. In addition to the very cold temperatures and wind chill readings expected with this Arctic front, heavy snow will also be developing tonight and continue into Saturday across the northern Rockies and in its lee. Total snowfall accumulations over the next few days are expected to be in the 1 to 2 foot range across these areas. A narrow band of heavy snow may also begin to push eastward along the Arctic frontal boundary across portions of the northern to central plains into the upper Mississippi Valley Friday night into Saturday.
Kevin Gordon, 700 WLW. It's America's Trucking Network. How are you doing? Thanks for hanging with us through the break. I'm here because you are there. Normally in the, well, all the time, or not all the time, most of the time, large percentage of the time. What is the actual terminology here? Well, whatever it is. Usually in this segment, we will do Today in Transportation History. I always like taking a step back and looking at transportation history only from the standpoint that because we have, I like to have an appreciation for how far we've come in such a short period of time. And then, of course, we learn some, or at least I learn a lot about some of the people that came before us and, you know, people that really didn't get the notoriety as some of the people that were actually, I mean, they were right there doing the same thing that everybody else was doing, and yet they didn't get the notoriety that the more popular person got. I always tease the fact that maybe they just didn't have a good PR person working with them. But we've learned, I've learned some interesting stories of some people who I never knew of before. And then also, you know, you see the sacrifices of people to get us to this point. And then also, you look at history and you see certain things that happened and you learn some lessons from history, and then you just don't repeat those in the future. Unlike some of our politicians that have no recognition of history and keep making the same mistakes over and over again. But the old saying, if you do not learn from history, you're destined to repeat it. On this date, January 27th, 1830, first railroad in Kentucky was chartered by the state's legislature. The charter for the Lexington and Ohio Railroad, L&O, named Lexington's citizens Elisha, depending upon how you pronounce it, Winter, and General Leslie Combs as the lead organizers for the new railroad. But the Elisha or Elisha, L-E-L-I-S-H-A, was a man. So I had to look that up because I thought, well, wow, having a woman as part of the charter of this thing would have been huge. The overall aim of Winter and Combs and the other L&O proponents was to find an effective means for moving goods from Lexington and other inland communities within the state of within the state of Kentucky to the Ohio River and beyond just that body of water, on to New Orleans and other port parts west and east even, and other markets worldwide. Lexington and other regions in Kentucky were unable to directly access steamboats for handling goods, because if you look at the map, Lexington pretty much and Frankfort, they're about 60 miles apart, 45 miles apart. But, you know, you usually have your capital, which is Frankfort, Kentucky, generally about in the center of the state. If you look at all the capitals around the country, generally they're right in the middle of the state, which makes it easier for the state capital, for people, the state legislators from coming from east, south, north, north, south, east, and west to travel pretty much the same in order to get there. But anyway, Lexington is pretty much in the middle of the state, and so they're not on a body of water. And at the time, they were not even in a major river. So the fact that they actually grew it to be a very large city is kind of remarkable in and of itself. But anyway, they didn't have direct access to steamboats for handling goods, and such widely used surface transportation options that such as stagecoaches did not provide the needed level of both speed and size, because when you're trying to transport a lot of goods, you need a big wagon, or you need, the Conestoga wagons and the big wagons at the time, they just couldn't handle as much freight as they wanted to. That's why the barge traffic and that sort of thing on the Ohio River was so popular. The L&O was seen as a solution to those logistical challenges, and not long after the charter was granted, iron rails imported from Liverpool, England, were used to, I guess that would be the original English invasion, wouldn't you think? Well before the Beatles, the Liverpool invasion, Liverpool, England, were used to begin construction of the line in Lexington. Limited operations along the new railroad railroad began as early as 1832. This is before locomotives were actually even invented and actually popularized. Horse-drawn cars would initially be used for the line, but steam locomotives were placed in service in 1833. Despite its pioneering role, the L&O remained in existence for only a few more years. The enterprise helped demonstrate early the economic potential of the new transportation mode in Kentucky. By 1860, there were approximately 596 miles of railroad tracks throughout the Bluegrass State. Now, interestingly enough, I'm kind of on a side note as well, back during the 1860s, and as you may recall, that was during the part of the Civil War, Kentucky technically was neutral. They had factions in the northern part of Kentucky that were sympathetic to the Union, and then those further south were sympathetic to the Confederacy. And although there were a few battles in the state of Kentucky, but because of the train routes and that sort of stuff, it was always a constant situation of where the railroad lines were either blown up or destroyed by the Confederate troops or then by the Union troops, depending upon who was taking over control or controlling that particular area. So the railroad industry during the 1860s in Kentucky took a beating. But anyway, that's today. Transportation history on this date, January 27th, 1830. Let's see here. You know, we've been talking about a lot of this. We've referred to ESG a number of times, and that's environmental, social, and governance. And this is something that is being a trend, and I hope it ends pretty darn soon. Companies can obtain an ESG label when they invest in causes seen as benefiting the environment or fulfilling social good. Folks, I would say that the freight industry, by transporting goods to and from warehouses and to the grocery shelves or to the stores, that is a social good in and of itself. The fact that a company employs employees and provides them with a paycheck, a living, an occupation, and that sort of stuff, that's social good. You know, I don't rail against this whole concept of giving back that you hear from people from time to time. I think corporations as a whole, the mere fact that they produce a good or they manufacture a good or they sell a good, they import a good, or they provide services and that type of thing, is a social good in and of itself. The giving back is hiring the employees in order to run those companies so that then they can have a sustainable wage and a living wage, et cetera. Now, I don't discount this giving back, a whole idea of contributions and that sort of stuff, but it should be voluntary. It should be from the heart and not something that you feel shamed into, contribution shaming, I guess. So anyway, that's by fulfilling a social good. Let's see. Often corporations and investors like BlackRock, the largest asset manager in the world, give money specifically to ESG causes, which I think is evil in and of itself. But these companies often decide for themselves what counts as socially beneficial. And see, this is the problem with this whole ESG movement. They determine what is considered good or evil. A Bloomberg investigation in 2021 found that many companies just said whatever padded their bottom line to get their ESG quota up. But company record on climate change often had little impact on how it performed in the ESG movement, and which it shouldn't. Environmental, again, if you're talking about climate change, which I think is one of the biggest hoaxes that has ever been perpetrated on the American public and the worldwide, to think that we can actually destroy a planet with as big as the planet is and what the planet has gone through throughout its entire existence is just ludicrous. And the fact is that BlackRock, they are big in this ESG, but they started these funds. And this is one of those little known secrets. They actually embedded those firms within the portfolios of somebody buying a mutual fund and then said, look at how many people are investing in these ESGs, even though it was buried within something that people probably had no idea that they were investing in. And so all of a sudden they have created the atmosphere and boosted it up and then claim that, look how popular this is. So everybody needs to jump on board. And what you see in corporate America sometimes is people are lemmings. They want to be part of the crowd. They want to be part of the in crowd. So they jump on board something that really doesn't make any sense to them, but it seems good for their bottom line. But anyway, the whole idea of going, if you're woke, you're going to go broke. When we get back, we're going to finish up on some of this stuff, some of the earnings news and some of the stuff going on in the marketplace. And, we'll just have a little bit more fun before we wrap up the week. I'm Kevin Gordon, America's Trucking Network, 700 WLW.
The Scott Antique Markets is this week.
This is America's Trucking Network, 700 WLW. I'm Kevin Gordon. As we roll on into, or continue to roll into this Friday morning, final show of the week already. Unbelievable. We're talking about this whole ESG concept and, praising companies that kowtow to the environmentalists or the communists, as I refer to them, because this entire green energy thing is nothing more than communism combined with environmentalism. That's why I call it climunism. But, this whole business of gearing in on the ESG and this sort of stuff, it's a fraud. I mean, it's just flat out fraud. This is interesting. Republicans led by Florida Representative Byron Daniels are launching a fresh attack on, now again, this is their words, not mine, a fresh attack on the growing use of environmental social governance principles by federal agencies as they spend taxpayers' money. Last week, he introduced legislation that would prevent federal agencies from requiring contract applicants to disclose the amount of greenhouse gases they emit. I mean, does somebody provide, now again, I am not into just trashing the world. I'm not into wasting stuff, but I am a conservationist first. I will tell you that I think in my entire lifetime, I have purchased one case of plastic water bottles. And it was only because we had some people over to the house and, rather than trying to, have different cups and glasses and all this sort of stuff, you could label the individual water bottles with people's names so that they know whose was what and all that sort of stuff. But I try to limit the amount. If I can buy something that's in glass, I buy in glass. I recycle like a son of a gun. And I think we ought to conserve things. I don't think we should waste. I mean, you've got these people preaching to us about, our carbon footprint when, in fact, they own three homes. They go private jets. They have the biggest limousines. I mean, look at the award shows. Is there a Prius there to be seen? No, it's all these limousines. So I digress. But anyway, do you provide a reasonable product that people want at a reasonable price, and you don't pollute the hell out of the planet, but you do things at least somewhat responsibly? You're not going to do any away with, you know, zero greenhouse gas and all this. As part of the push to prevent federal agency from promoting green energy or woke causes in the same way that investment firms such as BlackRock are basing their decisions. And I just said in the previous segment, and oh, by the way, if you miss any part of the program, be sure to hit that iHeartRadio app. Find 700 WLW, find America's Trucking Network, all the shows, all the interviews, and all my brilliant commentary are right there at your fingertips. But as we said in the previous segment, BlackRock is fraudulently promoting these causes. They have taken companies, their investment portfolio in supposedly ESG companies, and inserting those in the mutual funds that they sell or that they provide to their clients. And the clients are buying those, and that even though the other parts of that mutual fund are doing well, and even though the ESG companies are probably not doing so well, they're still doing better because there's a broad base of items in that mutual fund. And that then they can say, well, look at how many people are invested in these ESG funds, even though they are invested in there and they probably have no idea that they have invested in those. I think what I'm going to do is next week, I know we talked about this before and I had a story that laid that out. I think I'll revise that next week and talk about it again. But, you know, BlackRock, it's a fraud. They're ginning up the numbers. They're falsifying the numbers in terms of people interested in this movement. Republicans are ramping up their bid to challenge the Biden administration policy, allowing employers to consider green and social investments in 401ks. Now, the interesting thing here is data shows the average 401k in the U.S. is down, down. Did I say down? Let me repeat that. Down 25% this year, or $34,000 in a recent study shown 78% of funds are underperforming. So if you've got a 401k, if that's your investments and that's for your retirement, because you know that Social Security isn't going to provide enough for you, so you've taken it upon yourself to take your after-tax dollars and put that in a 401k plan for your future investment because you're doing the responsible thing for you and your family, your investments were down $34,000, 25% last year. Tech firms, these which are, you know, wonderful, you know, everybody wants to be, you know, in the techs, and you know, this is a hot stock for right now, and let's just go for it. Tech firms, these funds tend to support, have had to lay off employees, while oil and gas companies they tend to shun have shown profits soar. DeSantis led the charge last week by pulling $2 billion worth of its assets from BlackRock. State's chief financial officer, Jimmy Patronis, said, using our cash to fund BlackRock's social engineering project isn't something Florida ever signed up for. It's got nothing to do with maximizing returns, and the opposite is what an asset manager is paid to do. 10 states have also followed this. But when you've got the oil and gas industry, when you have those stocks going up, and as a firm like BlackRock doesn't allow or doesn't promote those companies to be invested by their investors, they're doing a total disservice to their companies and to their customers. You should be gearing people towards what is going to provide them the most return on their money. If they trust you and they give you money in order to invest, you should be maximizing those returns and not what is considered, you know, acceptable. And as we mentioned the last time, this whole ESG, somebody listing themselves as ESG friendly, it's up to their own markers. It's up to, there is no standard in terms of what is considered a good ESG index. So if they're making it up as they go along, and there's no specific guidelines as far as what that means, You remember a few years ago when they were talking about all this stuff in the supermarket and you started seeing natural products and when you started seeing stuff like organic. Yes, thank you, Alex. Jeez, old Pete. Organic products. And there was no standard in terms of what was considered organic. You know, they could still be natural products or nature-based, but with the pesticides and everything, it wasn't organic. And so there was this whole trend in terms of, well, okay, if you're going to list yourself as natural, you've got to have standards as far as that's concerned. And if you're going to be organic, there has to be standards in terms of what is considered organic. And with no standards in terms of what is considered a good ESG company, then they shouldn't even be talking about that at this point. Well, folks, that just about does it for us. By the way, as a programming note, next Wednesday we're going to be having our monthly talk with Ellen Voya. She is CEO, president, founder of Women in Trucking. And then on Thursday next week, we're going to be talking to Sam Collier. He is Dean of Manufacturing and Transportation Transportation Technologies at Gateway Community College. We're going to be talking about their program for CDL drivers and to get people into the CDL program and get them out on the road as soon as possible. So we'll be talking to him next week as well. Folks, that does it for us this week. Stay tuned for Red Eye Radio, top of the hour. I'm Kevin Gordon, America's Trucking Network, 700 WLW.
News, traffic, and weather. News Radio 700 WLW, Cincinnati.
Another ISIS leader bites the dust. I'm Sean McCormick, breaking now. The Pentagon saying U.S. Special Forces in Somalia have killed a top ISIS leader. It occurred on Wednesday. ABC's Chief Global Affairs Correspondent, Martha Raddatz.
This was a dramatic and risky ground raid by U.S. Special Operations Forces that the Pentagon says ended with the death of at least 10 ISIS fighters, including Bilal al-Sudani, who is said to be a top ISIS leader and organizer.
When it comes to service, Rush Truck Centers is committed to making you their top priority. Whether you're looking for same-day preventive maintenance, assistance from their dedicated service concierge team, or 24/7 access to your truck repair status, Rush Truck Centers offer customizable maintenance plans that fit your needs. What are you and your truck waiting for? Schedule an appointment with Rush Truck Center Service Department or ask them to dispatch a mobile service unit when and where you need it. Visit RushTruckCenters.com to find your nearest location. You can expect more from Rush Truck Centers.